Welcome back to Reading the Book of Mormon with Ryan. Am I covering? Anyway, well, welcome back to the Reading the Book of Mormon with Ryan. I am your host, Ryan Rydell, out of the lovely New York City. Today, our lovely guest is
Archie Egbert.
And he is, we've been knowing each other for how long now? Like 4 years? Five? Tal and I have been married for almost 6 years this June.
When did we meet?
2000? It was the Snowmageddon.
15?
Yeah, because it would have been like the January, February after. Because that I would have been what you thought was homeless.
Yeah.
That would have happened in November.
Yeah, it was 2015.
Then, yes.
Before I bought the truck, but I was working at the health department. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, so we've known each other for about 5 years. And yeah, so Archie, as I go through most of the questions. So where are you from?
I was born in Utah, and I was raised in the southern states.
No, I mean, where do you live now?
Oh, where do I live now? Sorry, I thought we were going deep dive
here. No, we're not. It's very brief.
Very, very brief.
Very shallow, just like most of me.
I live in Harlem, 129th Street.
Don't say exactly where you live.
I won't say what the cross street is, but...
That's fine.
Not too far.
It's beautiful. I was actually in your hood last night. So what is your current activation level in the church? Are you active, semi-active, inactive, post-Mormon, ex-Mormon, non-Mormon?
I would be considered active.
You are active?
Yeah. Ugh,
I just think about your calling and giggling.
I know.
And then, let's see. Okay, so there's that. Where do you fall on the LGBTQAI, mixed orientation marriage, and SSA spectrum?
Yes. When it comes to that, I'll probably be your most boring guest. I am a straight, heteronormative, white male. So I am married to a wonderful woman.
And I love her.
We're very fortunate to have a good marriage. On that spectrum, it depends on if you call the A ally or asexual. We're definitely allies.
Okay, that I like how you flipped that there. That's good. I like that. You already answered the next question. What's your relationship status?
Oh, I am married.
But you've already said that.
Yes, but I should say also, though, that this is my second marriage. I am divorced and remarried. I don't know if that counts for anything, but I've been through the ringer.
I mean, like, you're a human being and you've lived a human life.
Yeah.
I mean, like, okay.
So it's not like I kind of like stumbled into a first marriage and well,
I did.
It.
I literally
got lucky.
I got super lucky.
You got lucky.
I got super lucky. And then the last question is, did you serve a mission?
I did.
So most of my guests, I'm glad you're like one of the few people who realize that's a yes no question instead of fill in the blank. But for our guest's sake, where did you serve your mission?
So my mission was in the Philippines. It was Quezon City, which was part of Metro Manila. It'd kind of be akin to serving in Brooklyn and Queens, getting a New York City mission and serving in Brooklyn and Queens. Although now I think they've even split the mission up further.
Okay, I do have another fun question to ask you.
Well, how long ago I was a missionary?
No. We're not going to embarrass you. But did someone in your family also get a mission call recently?
They did. My parents are going to be serving in the Philippines in the next month and a half. I think they're leaving. So they're going to be serving right next to the temple in the presiding bishopric's office.
Oh, nice. So that's going to be missing. So today's section is 1 Nephi chapter 8. This is one of my personal favorite sections of the Book of Mormon of all time and ever. So I asked Archie and someone else to be a part of this episode. The other person, like, we've just had scheduling issues. So they are not here with us today, but hopefully in the future, me and that person will have an episode, just the two of us. But this should take about 8 minutes, so that should put us about 12 to 13 minutes into the podcast. So go ahead and skip that far if you already know the chapter. And this is 1 Nephi chapter 8. All right. And it came to pass that we had gathered together all manner of seeds of every kind, both of grain of every kind, and also the seeds of fruits of every kind. And it came to pass that while my father tarried in the wilderness, he spake unto us, saying, Behold, I have dreamed a dream. In other words, I have seen a vision.
And behold, because of the thing which I have seen, I have reason to rejoice in the Lord, because of Nephi and also of Sam. For I have reason to suppose that they and many of their seed will be saved. But behold, Laman and Lemuel, I fear exceedingly because of you. For behold, methought I saw you in my dream, a dark and dreary wilderness.
Well, here it gets good. And it came to pass that I saw a man, and he was dressed in a white robe, and he came and stood before me. And it came to pass that he spake unto me and bade me follow him. And it came to pass that as I followed him, I beheld myself that I was in dark and dreary wilderness.
And after I traveled for the space of many hours in darkness, I began to pray unto the Lord that he would have mercy on me, according to the multitude of his tender mercies. And it came to pass that I had prayed unto the Lord, I beheld a large and spacious field.
And it came to pass that I beheld a tree whose fruit was desirable to make one happy. And it came to pass that I did go forth and partake of the fruit thereof, and I beheld that it was most sweet above all that I have ever before tasted. Yea, I have beheld that the fruit thereof was white to exceed all the whiteness that I had ever seen.
And as I partook of the fruit thereof, it filled my soul with exceedingly great joy. Wherefore I began to be desirous that my family should partake of it also. For I knew that it was desirable above all other fruit. And as I cast my eyes round about that perhaps I might discover my family also, I beheld a river of water, and it ran along, and it was near the tree of which I was partaking the fruit.
And I looked to behold from whence it came, and I saw the head thereof a little way off, and at the head thereof I beheld your mother Sariah, and Sam, and Nephi, and stood as if they knew not whether they should go. And it came to pass that I beckoned unto them, and I also did say unto them with a loud voice that they should come unto me and partake of fruit which was desirable above all other fruit.
And it came to pass that they did come unto me and partake of the fruit also. And it came to pass that I was desirous that Laman and Lemuel should come and partake of the fruit also. Wherefore I cast mine eyes toward the head of the river, that perhaps I might see them. And it came to pass that I saw them, but they would not come unto me and partake of the fruit.
And I held a rod of iron, and it extended along the bank of the river, and led to the tree by which I stood. And I also beheld a straight and narrow path which came along by the rod of iron, even to the tree by which I stood, and it also led by the head of the fountain unto a large and spacious field, as it had been a world.
And I saw numbers of concourses of people, many of whom were pressing forward, that they might obtain the path which led unto the tree by which I stood. And it came to pass that they did come forth and commence in the path which led to the tree.
And it came to pass that there arose a mist of darkness. Oh, I'm dropping my book! Darkness, yea, even exceedingly great mist of darkness, insomuch that they who had commenced in the path did lose their way, that they wandered off and were lost.
And it came to pass that I beheld others pressing forward, and they came forth and caught hold of the end of the rod of iron, and they did press forward through the mists of darkness, clinging to the rod of iron, even until they did come forth and partake of the fruit of the tree. And after they had partaken of the fruit of the tree, they did cast their eyes about as if they were ashamed.
And I also cast my eyes round about and beheld on the other side of the river a great and spacious building, and it stood as it were in the air high above the earth. And it was filled with people, both old and young, both male and female, and their manner of dress was exceedingly fine, and they were in the attitude of mocking and pointing their fingers towards those who had come at and were partaking of the fruit.
And after they had tasted of the fruit, they were ashamed, because of those that were scoffing at them, and they fell away into forbidden paths and were lost. And now I, Nephi, do not speak all the words of my father, but to be short in writing, behold, he saw other multitudes pressing forward, and they came and caught hold of the end of the rod of iron, and they did press their way forward, continually holding fast to the rod of iron, until they came forth and fell down and partook of the fruit of the tree.
And he also saw other multitudes feeling their way towards that great and spacious building. And it came to pass that many were drowned in the depths of the fountain, and many were lost from the view, wandering in strange roads.
And great was the multitude that did enter into that strange building. And after they did enter into that building, they did point the finger of scorn at me and those that were partaking of the fruit also, but we heeded them not. These are the words of my father, for as many as heeded them had fallen away.
And Laman and Lemuel partook not of the fruit, said my father. And it came to pass, after my father had spaken all the words of his dream or vision, which were many, he said unto us, because of these things which he saw in a vision, he exceedingly feared for Laman and Lemuel. Yea, he feared lest that he should cast off from the presence of the Lord.
And he did exhort them then with all the feeling of a tender parent, that they would hearken to his words, that perhaps the Lord would be merciful to them, and not cast them off. Yea, my father did preach unto them. And after he had preached unto them, and also prophesied unto them of many things, he bade them to keep the commandments of the Lord, and he did cease speaking unto them.
Okay, what jumps out at you?
I kind of marked a couple of things that I thought were interesting. Kind of, you go back to the beginning where it talked about the fruit being most sweet and being filled with joy. But also kind of at the end, I've never really kind of paid attention to this, but in verse 34, where it talks about the people who heeded them had fallen away. I think that's interesting. I guess I look at that and I say, what does it mean to heed?
It says, in 34, there are the words of my father, for as many as heeded them had fallen away.
Yeah.
So it's like, for one that found their way, one fell away. So it's like 50-50 that you're either going to make it or you're not.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me that, like, he knows he's putting his work out there, but he also can see that, like, as many people that are coming are as many people that are as falling away.
Yeah, and I guess for me, where I struggle with that is, I guess I always have this idea of mercy that's also talked about, right? The great mercy of the Lord in speaking to us.
Like a tender parent?
Yes, and I guess I see that, and I don't really know where the falling away really happens. Can you ever fall away from a merciful Lord?
I feel like what they're talking about here is there's a lot of things to me that I'm like, I just look at it and think about, like, a lot of this has to do with perception.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this has to do with, like, intent. Yeah. And I've talked about this on the podcast before, is that there is faith and fear and faith and love, and faith and fear is not sustainable, and faith and love is sustainable. So, like, what jumps out to me is the constant mention of, like, fine clothing. It's like, so this building, they don't talk about how big it is or how, if it's a nice building or not, but they talk about the clothing these people are wearing.
Yeah.
And they mention it several times. And then there's a brief mention of, there's other places, people, other paths or something that people mm-hmm. take?
After they take it, they went to verse 28. Yeah. It talks about scoffing, and then they fall away to forbidden paths.
So it's like, so what are these paths, and how many of them are there, and what are the forbidden paths? And, like, that's, like, I mean, like, I think about it as, like, children, you're told, don't do this, don't do this, don't do that. And I feel like we have, as members of the church, this is a really binary type thing. We don't really talk about those, like, excess paths. We talk about the tree.
Yeah.
We talk about the iron rod.
Yes.
We talk about the path, the mist, the building.
Yeah. And the floating building, too. It's always floating.
But it doesn't say that. Is it doesn't say that it's floating?
Oh, I think the... Where is it? It just talks about as if the people are in the air. And so that's just sort of kind of where they get
But would
it.
That just because they're high up in the building?
Yeah, and where light is, or if there's windows or not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just kind of... That's just one thing from primary that I always remember. They talk about this floating building. I mean, it's probably not scripture as much as it is. You know, that's what they taught a young kid. I've always joked with the iron rod, though, because I find oftentimes how... We as a church interpret the commandments of God are extremely rigid, and the iron rod is very rigid. And I've always joked that I have, you know, bungeed myself to the iron rod. And so that way I can kind of jump out for a little bit, and then it kind of pulls me right back in. And that's just sort of a way I kind of envision it quite a bit. Not that I'm, like, jumping away to run off into any sort of sin, but there's times where the rigidity of it can be overwhelming for me.
And taxing. Also, yeah. I think that sometimes what we're taught as members of the church is unclear. And it's like, well, what am I holding on to? And it's like, you start to question, like, wait, did I somehow let go of the iron rod and I'm holding on to something else? Am I holding on to the, like, staircase? Did I end up in the building somehow and I'm holding on to the staircase?
Or you're holding on to the iron rod and then they say, oh, you know what? Here's another rod. Hold on to this one too. And this rod.
And
this rod.
And then you're like, wait, which one is the original rod?
And they keep adding to the word of God, which, you know, on one hand, I agree with. I like this concept of continuing revelation. But I also believe in personal revelation.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that's really important. And there's times where, yeah, there's either the iron rod has gotten too big to actually hold on to, or maybe I just need to be better at managing holding it.
So where do you think you, like, in this analogy, where do you think you are?
You know, it's tough to say.
For me, it's super easy for me to say.
I think in the midst of this, I am still struggling along the path. But I know what the fruit tastes like. I haven't made it to the tree. I've tasted the fruit, but I haven't made it to the tree.
Like, you feel like someone's, like, given free samples along the way of, like, this is so you know what it tastes like, but you haven't fully partaken of it?
Yeah, or maybe you get the first one, and then, like, we have to go to the next tree. Maybe there's more trees that we have to go to.
That it's
because... And so we continue on, and that's why there's more paths. You talk about forbidden paths. You know, once you get to this first tree, you have more places to go. There's more trees to eat from.
And also, like, for me, this is how I feel about it for myself. Is I feel like I'm standing, like, I'm not in the fountain. I'm standing parallel to the path, and I'm going along the path. I'm lightly touching the iron rod, but I would say, because what it says is people let go of the rod during the mist of darkness. So I would say, like, I am currently in the mist of darkness, but holding on to the rod.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I haven't let go, but I also feel like there's a lot of darkness here. And I feel like as LGBTQIA people, I feel like the church becomes that for us a lot of the time. But,
yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's interesting because I think what it really comes down to is how do we define the tree? The tree in this is the vision of the tree of life. So it's sort of like you take of this fruit and you have eternal life, you know, like almost like that is your end goal. So you've worked a whole lifetime to get to that goal.
Yeah, like it's eternal salvation and so all of those things.
I kind of view that as like that's the judgment day, right? Like that's the end of life. So in what life we're still pressing forward, but at the same time it's kind of concurrent, isn't it? I don't know how it's. I kind of feel maybe it's like every day we wake up and we have to choose. You know, it's like Groundhog's Day.
Every day,
but we're trying to get to this tree. And some days we get to the tree. And some days we get lost in the mist.
Some days we end up in the building.
And some day we get the tree and we get it and we're ashamed of it.
Well, I mean, like, there's days like November a few years ago where I was super ashamed to, like, be like, please God, no one know that I'm a Mormon. Like, when like the policy came out, like, at first I was like, I don't care. I have company in town. I don't care about this. And then people started calling me and then I started reading it and it started to infuriate me. And I talked to one of my sisters about it and she tried to placate me. And the more that I read about it, I was like, no one with a testimony should ever say that this is good.
Yeah.
And then like a few weeks later, Nelson gets up and goes, it was revelation.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, that is not what my personal revelation, because of the relationship I have built with our Heavenly Father, says about this at all. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we will be right back. All right. We're back. We're with Archie and we're doing 1 Nephi chapter 8. Now we're going to talk about, so this is going to be a different format than normal. Instead of what we talk about how this applies to us as LGBTQAI people, now we're going to talk about it. Archie's going to ask me a lot of questions about this chapter. I'm going to talk about things and he's going to ask me to expand about things. But for me, the big things here are, like, it's not clear, like, the straight and narrow path is clearly defined, and the iron rod is defined, the building's defined, but it's not defining, like, how people are getting there. Are they, like, going along the way helping each other, or are they pushing each other out of the way, and is that what's getting people to fall off the rod? And, like, as LGBTQAI people, I think about, like, I'm doing this podcast for myself, but I'm also doing it for other people to realize, like, there are gay members of the church out there. There are people who are wanting to find that dialogue of LGBT-ness. And I think I'm leaning in myself and I'm trying to pull other people along the way. But sometimes I'm like, am I, or am I pushing people out of the way? You know what I mean?
I do. Although I have to say, given that you said I would get to ask the questions, you spent the last minute and a half asking yourself a question.
No, I was also asking you. I'm sorry.
That is fine. I'm just saying. Here's my question for you, Ryan. Ugh. Let's go to verse 10. I'm curious about this. Verse 10 reads, "It came to pass that I beheld a tree whose fruit was desirable to make one happy." And I'm curious, for you, talk to me about when you first recognized this tree that would make you happy in your life. And then talk to me, what happened, or how did that change as you became aware of your sexual identity?
So for me, like, as an LGBTQ person, like, applying this just to myself, I think of marriage. Was kind of like, it was that thing that I was told, like, you're never going to be able to obtain this. It's never going to happen for you. And if it is, gays are not monogamous. Gays, it's a farce. It's a fairy tale. You're going to end up being divorced. You're going to end up cheating on each other. You're like all of these negative things. And I wondered, like, how true that is and how, like, what that actually meant.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, for me, for a long time, marriage was. And so the iron rod was kind of like dating to date. And that path was like trying to find someone to actually date versus the building of like, let's just fuck. And like going over there, which is very easy to go over to that building of like, let's just fool around versus, you know, dating for, you know, towards marriage. Now that I'm married, I feel like, okay, I've obtained that fruit. And now it's like, I feel like I'm calling out to people. Like, I have friends that I feel like I'm calling out to, both heteronormative and LGBTQAI. And I'm like, what is your path? And I have some friends that are like, I never want to get married. I have no desire to get married. And I feel like, well, their tree of truth or fruit is something else than it is for me.
Yeah.
And so I feel like there's, because my personal interpretation, when we use the church's interpretation of like the word of God is the iron rod and the tree of fruit is his love, is that the big thing they push? Sometimes I try to block out like the hardcore, like this is what the church interprets.
Yeah.
Because I can't digest that.
Yeah.
Because it seems synthetic. It's like,
so as you apply the scripture to your life, then you look at it as a personal application of having a strong relationship with a partner, with a spouse.
Yes.
As the goal, and seeing it,
well,
to
I
be,
did.
Yeah,
now
seeing
it's
it
different.
To be desirable, and then working your way to get there.
Yes. And so now I would say that the, for me, as a married gay man, my goal is children is the next fruit that I want.
Yeah.
And I think you brought this up in the first section about, are there many trees?
Yeah.
And I feel like, yeah, there has to be, and there has to be different fruits, and there has to be different goals, and has to be different things along the way that like, let us know, like you're going in a good direction. And I wonder how many people make it to the tree that leave the building and be like, I don't even need the iron rod. I
yeah.
see the tree. I'm in the building. I've left the iron rod. I've gone in the building. Oh, I can make it through the fountain. And I can see from that point of view.
Yeah. And, you know, I just kind of had this thought right now, too. And it, we don't know the size of the tree. You know, a lot of times when we talk about the tree, we think of our maybe something, what, 30 feet tall?
Maybe
like with a 5-foot diameter and low-hanging fruit. I mean, who knows how big this tree is? Who knows how many paths are along the tree? And as we try different parts of the tree, that there aren't different parts that have been grafted in. And to sort of say, like, experience the tree of life.
I mean,
and if this tree is much bigger than we realize.
I mean, technically, I was watching a video about world's largest organisms in bed the other night. And Tal thought it was the dumbest thing.
Oh, yeah, but it's like quaking aspen trees?
Yes!
Yeah.
Quaking aspens are the largest.
They're beautiful trees.
They're beautiful trees, but they're the largest living single organism.
Yeah.
Is that the...
Yeah.
Is
Who
that
knows?
The tree of fruit? Like,
well, there's no fruit on them.
But I get that, but maybe in...
Until you get there.
Truth.
Okay, so then let's go to 12 then. I think this is what's interesting then. So if you talk about... You know, marriage is being this tree, and then onto a family. So just family in general, right? As being
okay.
part of this tree. It says here that once people are... Verse 12, once you partake of it, you desire other people to partake of it.
And I feel like I want my friends and I want other members of the LGBTQ community to realize, like, hey, all those people that told you that this isn't a reality, I feel like it is a reality.
Yeah.
And I feel like... like with Netflix shows. You got a good Netflix show you watching right now?
You know, I finished The Witcher.
I want to see that.
I liked it a lot.
Okay, but
I started to watch the one Evelyn recommended.
The Messiah.
The Messiah. But I started the first episode and it didn't really like grab me.
Okay.
I'll try another one though.
But the thing is though is like you found a show you like and you're gonna tell people about it.
Yes.
And I feel like this is like that. Like
yeah.
To me, marriage, being in a gay marriage, I feel like I am an advocate for gay marriage because I am in a marriage.
Yeah.
Because, especially to LGBT Mormons, because so many of them are still in areas of the church or in, you know, indoctrinated areas that are like, people are still like, gay shouldn't come here or
yeah.
gays, like, so there's a lot of things like that that, I mean, like, I feel like I'm calling out to them. And that's also kind of I feel like about this podcast is, like, it's to reach them. And that's my truth about what this tree is. I've experienced that truth. But there could be other people that are like, the truth is be single. Like, you know my friend Dustin.
Yeah.
Dustin is kind of... I think he wants to get married. But I think he's also getting to a point where he's like... His standards are so high, and I feel like they're getting higher as he gets older, and that he's going to absolve himself to understanding that, you know, his truth and his fruit is, you know, singleness.
And then I guess I have another question I have for you then is, in relationship to the church, as we're here talking about being members of the church.
Yes.
How was your status in the church perceived by you pre-marriage and post-marriage?
So.
Did you feel comfortable at church
pre-marriage? Oh, never. Never. I felt like, so, I've talked about this before. Basically, like, when I was in high school, I would come home my freshman year and I'd get these awful talks from my mother. And then usually they coincided with me being physically, sexually assaulted at school. And she would say these things and I would be like, oh, this is my punishment, was being, you know, sexually assaulted at school. So, you know, that's what I get for having these feelings. And God's if I'm faithful, God's going to, forgive me of this, and for God's going to, because if I enjoy this thing that this kid at school is doing to me, then I'm going to go to hell. And if I tell my parents about it, that means I acknowledge that it's happening. But if I don't acknowledge it and I don't enjoy it, you know, it's going to go away, and my, you know, same sex is going to go away. And so I was deeply afraid. And I taught, that's from my experience, like, that's why faith and fear doesn't last. And I feel like then I went on my mission because I was so scared of actually being gay, that if I didn't go on a mission, I was going to be gay. And then if I was gay, I was going to have this terrible life because that's what my parents had taught me. And then I went on my mission and went to BYU, Idaho, and I got kicked out of school. And then I went to Utah State. Oh, hi, Mr. Man. You going to join us? And so, I mean, like, while I was there, I kind of realized my faith was not doing anything for me. It was turning me into a terrible person. It was turning me into a liar. It was turning me into this awful, vindictive person. And then I went to Utah State and realized the church is not for me. And when I realized that, like, my fear-based faith left me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I finished my schooling, and then I got robbed, insurance settlement. I was like, fuck it, moving to New York. When I came here, out of my love for my sister Cassie, she asked me to come back to church at least once. So I did. I made some friends rather quickly. And when I told them I was gay, they instantaneously looked past it, which was shocking to me.
Yeah.
And so that, then, like, slowly I started coming back to church and making more friends. Rachel, you know Rachel? She, blonde curly hair Rachel?
I think so. Yes.
Yes. Uh-huh. So made friends with her. And then I introduced me to John Penny back when he was a heterosexual. And then, like, slowly I started getting more and more active in church. And then I started to see, like, that I was standing and, like, that I was coming back. That, like, if you're talking about my faith, I guess I was on the path. Then I left the path willingly and went to a random path, if not the building, I guess you would say. And then I came back. Yeah. And then I found what I was looking for. And now I feel like there's, now looking back for me, like, I have found my love-based faith to their church, and I am ready to call out bullshit in when I see things at church. For example, Sunday. Sunday.
Don't name names.
I'm not going to name names, but my bishop, I guess, contacted our stake president and said, I'm speaking about apostasy at church. And I was like, cool. So my stake president met with me, you know, well, our stake president,
mm-hmm.
who I adore. I think he's super dope. And I addressed all of these things that I guess were told to him before he even told me what I needed to address. And then I left, and me and him left on the same page of, like, this was a waste of time, but it was fun to catch up. And then I went and I ran into two Elders Quorum teachers and two Sunday school teachers, and I asked them both, like, what do I say at church that is, you know, could be misconstrued or bad? And it's really interesting to see how, like, I feel like that person is in the building holding on to the staircase or stairwell, being like, that person's not as righteous as I am as they walk up the staircase. But I feel like if you could realize that your journey is your journey, and your journey doesn't need to be better or worse than mine, but yours.
Yeah.
And my journey needs to be mine.
Yeah.
But help people in an honest, genuine way.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. There's a lot of people that feel that Mormonism is a competitive sport.
Ugh,
and
no.
It really isn't. You know, it's a cooperative idea. We get there together. I mean, in a way, we get there together or we don't get there at all. Which is kind of a hard pill to swallow, because that means those people that we don't like, that we don't want to see climb that stairwell with their piety, we need to help them along. It's a very bitter pill for me to swallow. And this is, my wife, Kim, she challenged me on this when I explained to her some of my frustrations in working with church leadership. She just kind of gave me a smile and was like, now you know what it's like to be a woman. You know, which kind of made me laugh, because I was just like, all right, thank you very much, Kim, for putting my place. You know, yes, from my very privileged perch of being the priesthood holder, you know, I haven't had to go through what you and your friends have gone through as members of the queer community. But one thing that I have seen, and one thing that I really enjoy with my current calling, is I've seen a lot of members who identify as LGBTQIA, SSA, however it wants to be called. I see them...
Because you have someone in your ward that definitely prescribes themselves as SSA versus everyone else in your ward.
Well, but it's I like that.
And me too, me too.
I like that everybody...
He's coming on in, I think, the next episode.
Can actually come to themselves and say, here's who I am. Mm-hmm. And what I have discovered is that the more open people are, and the more vulnerable people are, and the more they say they don't know, the better off the ward is. The stronger the spirit is. And it's interesting, because that's really my only gauge to judge. The spirit is present. The spirit is there, or the spirit isn't there. Either the spirit testifies of truth or it doesn't. And when people share their truth with each other, when they stand up and say, I don't know, but here's what I'm doing and here's where I'm struggling, there is a spirit of truth there helping us work together.
I get that. To me, like, that sounds genuine. And I think that I want to say that, like, the path is like a genuine path. Like, yeah. It's trying to help. The call to the people who are using the IRA is genuine. And it's honest. And it's coming from a good place.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything malicious or bad about it. When I think, like you said, like, when we do Mormonism as a contact sport or as a competitive sport, like, look at how more righteous I am. Like, I wear my Sunday clothes all Sunday, yeah, so that I can keep the spirit. And I'm like...
Or do people have their fast on a timer? Oh, you know, yeah, like 23 hours, 59 minutes. They're, like, you know, they won't break their fast.
That's a real thing?
No, I don't know.
I'm like, ooh.
No, I think I tried a full 24-hour fast once. It was...
No, thank you. Yeah. Two meals, and I'm good. And Let me tell you, I'm going to have that last...
First and second breakfast.
Like, yes.
You do fasting Hobbit style.
No. Like, I'm going to do... Like, I'm going to eat... Like, lunch is going to be at, like, 5 o'clock today, and we're going to fast dinner, and then we will fast breakfast, but we're going to have lunch at, like, 11.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. This last Sunday, we had a talk with Gabe, who is our son, and we talked with... He asked a question about fasting, because he's 11 now, so he now he's in the new Sunday school. And so he just thought because he skipped breakfast and was late for lunch, that could count as a fast.
Oh,
and I just started laughing. I just said, you know, Gabe, here's the deal. Like, no one's going to judge you. Like there is no book. We don't keep a record of how many times you fasted. We don't keep a record at church of who's fasted and who hasn't.
Oh, like, so he would like, be like a token to be he's like, I'd like to trade this in for my fast Sunday so I don't have to fast this time.
Like, Dad, does this count? And I just started laughing because it's like,
I love that.
He's already started this mentality of, I need this just to count. And I had to like kind of explain to him that it's not about counting, it's about intention. And that's a big thing for him to learn what the right intention of the fast is.
What I also like is the clamor to Mormon celebrity. Like, just take presidents and area authorities and general authorities. Like, people will get up and clamor to them, and I will just sit in the back row and gladly, like, sipping on my dad, Dr. Pepper, side eye, whatever you want to call it. But I feel like we have to look at these things as a personal kind of thing. And I think that what is the fruit of the tree is the thing that you're going to, you're working at. It can't be something like watching a TV show. You don't work at that. I mean, it just happens.
Yeah.
But like, trying to find marriage, trying to have kids, like, those are things that you work towards.
Yeah.
They don't just, like, I mean, for some people, kids, it just happens.
The hard thing I would say, working towards, and this is where I really struggle, is working towards forgiving others.
Last year was, that was hard for me.
Yeah, I kind of wish I could go back to not being aware of it. Because the more aware of it I am, the more I'm, like, constantly struggling with it.
All right. Well, we're going to pause right there, and we're going to come right back. All right. Welcome back! So, here we are, section 3, and we're going to talk to Archie about the LGBTQAI community. And the first thing that jumps out to me is the iron rod and the path and how, for a long time, that's been like the weaponized weapon against the LGBTQAI community at church. And if you wanted to be on the path, you had to be SSA and doing conversion therapy.
Yeah. You know, what I think is so interesting, just as we were talking about Mormon as a competitive sport, I think it's, we try so hard to make us all look the same.
Ugh.
And it's really annoying. I mean, just look at the first verse of this, where it talks about they gathered seeds of every kind, grain of every kind, and the seeds of fruit of every kind. But then it's like, but then we grabbed just one kind of people.
Yeah.
and that's why we lose a lot of it. There's a, what's the hymn? Onward Christian, not shoulders, Onward Christian soldiers. Or it talks about blend with ours your voices. This concept of blending in. Don't uniform, don't match us, but come join us, but bring what makes you to the group.
I love that.
And there is so much of modern Mormonism that is just
scrubbed and sterilized, and it's given to us to this package where you check, but if you're male, you do this. If you're female, you do this. If you're male and you're at this thing, you do it this way. And if you're female, you do it this way.
Yeah.
And if you're a male and you're female and you like each other, if you date for at least a few months, then you get married, you get to the temple, and then you're happily ever after. And it's like, a lot of these things, like, we've been promised, and like this and this and this and this. If you just do this, if you just do this, there's a lot of people who are like, well, I've done those things, and I'm not happy, and I'm not, you know.
Yeah, and it's you know, the church will look around and say, well, look, the fact that there's members in our building is proof that this concept works. And what they're not seeing are all the people that have been left to the side. All the people who are just outside of the doors of the church wanting to come in, but can't because they don't feel welcome, because they don't meet these boxes of homogenized thinking.
So, I love that you bring this up, because I just listened to another podcast today. It's by Derek Knox and a friend of his in Boston. The Stupid Hot Black Guy. And it's a great podcast. If you're listening to my podcast, you need to go over and listen to their podcast because it's much better. But they were talking about the idea of dissension. Is that if you have like, there's a test, Derek will explain it much better. It's on the very first episode of his podcast, Beyond the Block. That's the name of his podcast. Listen to it. It's fantastic. In the very first episode, they talk about the idea of like, they did some kind of test with people where they would have people read something and then everybody confirmed that that's what's being read. But then they would put a test subject in there who, all the people would read the wrong thing. But then because the test subject did not want to dissent to say like, no, that's not what's on the card, they would just agree. And I feel like in Mormonism, I feel like that's what a lot of Mormonism is. And Derek brings that up. And he's talking about like, as the idea of LGBTQAI people, when you see one openly share their voice, like it makes it easier for the next generation of people to like share their voice. And I know that there's a couple people in our stake that and people that have come through our stake who are LGBTQAI. And I know that they've set open up doors so that when I came to this stake, that I could open doors for the next generation of people that are coming through. And I mean, like, as people see like, oh, here's active gay LGBTQAI Mormons, here's active married LGBTQAI Mormons, like, and like, we can start to include those people in conversation. You're in a singles ward, correct?
Mm-hmm. I am.
And about, if you were in Utah in a singles ward, how many open LGBTQAI people do you think would be in your stake? I mean, in your ward.
In the ward, oh, there would probably be half of one. There'd be one person who probably came to activities who would be open.
And there'd probably be another one that's like crying on Sundays to you as a member of the bishopric.
Maybe, possibly, yeah.
Yeah. But then, like, don't tell anyone, don't tell anyone. But in your ward, how many openly LGBTQAI SSA people do you have in your ward?
Several.
I can count at least six right off the top of my head. Many. But I'm sure it's a bigger number than that if I just, like, took the time to be like, oh, that person's in your ward and that person's in your ward. And then I know that there's, like, the mid-singles have a bunch in their ward and then the Lincoln Square have a bunch in their ward. So
they're everywhere.
They're everywhere. And the number is growing. Mm-hmm. It's not getting smaller. It's getting bigger.
And I like that.
Me too.
I like that there's conflict with it also. I really like that it forces us to examine our beliefs and our doctrine and to really dig into it and understand what certain things mean.
I mean, which of those mini rods that you told us earlier, we were talking about earlier, like, which one is the honest truth and which one is like a bigoted, you know, personal prejudice that a general authority pushed onto the members of the church and the members of the church bought? Or is it the truth? And if it's the truth, why hasn't like the church come out with a definitive answer on it? Because personally, my personal opinion about the church's policy on LGBTQAI people is they've just now started to address the issue. But it's 15 heteronormative, bigoted, old, white, and two people of color people who are surrounded by yes people. And no matter what they say, it's going to be correct and right. And they have a whole PR department to push it, to say that it's the right thing. They have a whole like team of people to push the message, and I honestly feel like they're just, you know, shotgun blasting ideas at a wall and like just pulling one off willy-nilly. I feel like they're not giving it as much attention and prayer as I think they're giving other things.
But you know, it's interesting. I think that, at least for me, the way I perceive a lot of things, not to take away from that, but it's really to examine what the scriptures teach us and what this chapter have taught us, like with Lehi's vision, is an individual path to happiness.
Yes.
There isn't an institutional path to happiness. Lehi's vision did not involve a church organization or a business. It was, this is for people who want to come to happiness, will have to struggle, will have to go through mists of darkness, who will have to hold on to the iron rod, which we determined to be the word of God, right? Which is this concept of the gospel. And that as we hold on to the gospel, as we hold on to the teachings of Christ, we come to this happiness. And it's up to us to find that right path. I kind of feel like a lot of times what the church has tried to do is they're trying to pave a highway for us. They're trying to say, guys, here's the right path. You know, this is the right path. Everybody go this path.
Check these boxes.
Yeah, this is your path. This is your path. This is your path. And ultimately, what it really comes back to is it comes back to us. The responsibility is on us. That we are the ones who are supposed to be doing this. It's not going to be left to somebody else.
No.
It's going to be left to us. And what I have found to be so successful in the ward that I'm serving in is that people do reach out to each other. People do reach out. And there's that kindness that is shown. There is compassion that is shown. There's vulnerability that is shown. And in those moments, there is a spirit that shows up through friendship. And that to me is the most meaningful thing within the church.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, like, when you have people you can rely on and people you can trust, I mean, like, it makes going to church that much easier. Like, for example, I called your sister the other day. Yesterday. I called her yesterday. Twice. To ask her questions about her job. But, like, and then Tal also had questions for her because of a position he's in right now about having to donate some money to animal charities. And it's like, but, and then also we talked about her as a human being. We talked about us. We talked about, and it was, like, nice being able to talk to a friend.
Yeah.
And then we also, like, I went to, the other day I went to run, do, like, I have a fun day with the Bennetts in our ward, and he's in the bishopric, and he was, and they both kept saying, like, where's your husband? Why isn't he here? And I'm like, well, somebody has to make money. But also Tal had a large project he was working on. So it was like, it's nice to know that, like, people see us as a family unit.
Yeah.
And people see us as human beings, and they know that I see them as human beings, and I see them as family units, and that we kind of, like, admire each other for what we're doing, and we both understand that, like, your family has different struggles than my family has different struggles than yours, but we're both here to, like, we know the struggles of the other families, and we're here to support.
Yeah. And I think that's actually one thing that's quite remarkable is I've learned, it's difficult, but I've learned the importance of asking for help. It's hard.
Oh, it's so dumb.
It's very tough to just kind of say, hey, guys, I need help.
And how much everyone hates asking for help.
But it's also surprising because so many times we've always told other people, let me know what I can do to help. Everybody is willing to help others, but we're so often, you know, conflicted when it comes to asking for help ourselves, which is unfortunate because you really bond with people through serving them. You really bond with people by being there in the proverbial trenches and helping them kind of climb out of things.
I mean, like, for example, as LGBTQAI people, like, a lot of us have needed someone to help us come out. And then how do you come out at church and realize your religion? And how do you, like, when you serve people by being an ally, like you are, it makes, and knowing that there are other people like me and Dustin and Jensen and John, who are my besties, like that there are other people out there. And then I have found, so Dustin started a podcast that follows the Come Follow Me manual. And then Derek Knox has a one that is very similar to the Come Follow Me manual that he followed last year. out of Boston. And so I'm starting to find other, like, dissenting views. Like, there are positive gay, you know, things out there. And that's the whole reason I started this, is so that there are people standing at the tree calling out to the rest of the gays saying, like, yes. And all of us had different paths. All of us are different. But we all want people to stay and partake of the faith that we have partook of, and we understand how sweet it is and how great it is.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you hit on something right there, too, is, you know, we may struggle with understanding or just kind of the position of where the church is at right now, but we still see the truth to it.
Yes. And the thing is, like, when I was earlier, when I was talking about, I forget what I was talking about, but the big thing is like, truth is truth, and like, your personal revelation sometimes will trump these sweeping doctrines that don't sound right, because sometimes things will come from the church and you're like, this doesn't sound right, even about like women or like just different things. And as we get older, we're like, this doesn't sound right. And it's not that you're like saying the church isn't true, you're just like, this doesn't sound right. My personal relationship with Heavenly Father says this doesn't work. And you're not questioning the church. You're not, you know, saying bad church, but you're saying we can do better, or this doesn't sound right. But why does this not sound right?
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know either.
You know, but that's one thing I like, is it's important to, I think, to tell people when they think like, oh, everybody's complaining or people are arguing about the church. We're not upset with the church because we think we've been bamboozled and it's wrong. We're upset at times because this church is truthful, because this truth that we believe in is powerful, and it's part of this church. And we see it as, when it hurts people, we don't want it to hurt people.
And it's hard to see it hurt people.
Yeah.
And it's also hard to realize that, oh, you used lies to tell the truth, but you won't admit that you used lies to tell the truth. And you've also used fear to push an agenda. And it's like, not just as LGBTQAI people, but you've used that against blacks. You've used it against women. You've used it against minorities. You've used it against Jews. Like there's all kinds of things that we've used against, you know, things. And then, like, you have people like, I openly speak out against Elder Oaks, openly, because I think he is just an old bigot that needs to die. And, like, he's using his authority as a general authority to preach an agenda that is just hateful and unchristlike. Because he's, like, made comments against feminists and intellectuals and gays and people of minorities. And it's like, why are you saying this? Shouldn't you want those people to be on your side? Like, we're not heteronormative white people who are going to praise you just because you had someone give you a calling. And not everything you say is scripture. And not everything is doctrine. And not everything you say is good. You still are a human being, just like I am. And you're able to make mistakes, just like I am. Just like any gay person is able to make mistakes. And, you know, there's a part in Sex and the City that I really like, where they say once every 6 months, women of New York would gather to wash away the sins of their past because it was fashion week and new fashions would come out. And so I think of that too, as like how every day is that for us. And like how, like you said, like maybe every day we're trying to get to the tree. And I think also in the scriptures, it talks about the people who are just out in like a wasteland. Really briefly, it touches on this. And I think that the church has pushed a lot of people, especially LGBTQAI people, into that. Like, because they have paved the road. If you don't fit our model of the road, you can't be on this road.
Yeah. So, like, this is your exit right here. So this is where you exit.
This is where you get off. And there's a cliff. LGBT people, like, bye, sorry. And then people have drowned and or committed suicide.
Yeah.
Because of the things that the church has said. And it's like, and you take none of the responsibility for that. And it's really sad to me to listen to those things. Like, I don't know.
You know, and that's just it. I think for someone in my position, It's very important to recognize the importance of not only just being an ally, but being somebody who will listen and then what's the word here? To raise their voices.
To let
people hear the truth of what's going on. And it's yeah, I don't know quite how to phrase it. I don't know quite what it is about that, but there's a struggle that is happening, and it's the best that I can do is to be there, and to listen and to praise and to, you know, teach and to help and to learn and just make them part of my community.
So, I, as a personal experience with you, I feel like there have been moments where my husband and I needed you there and you were there. And like, there have been moments where I've asked for help from other people, even in our ward, who I've like, and they don't, they say they will help, but then they don't show up. So it's like a testament to you for showing up. And then there's, when I was in school at Utah State, when I was getting ready to leave the church, there were people that would be like, I would love to help, but you're like, all of a sudden, like, my sexuality was like, we can't help you because you're gay.
Yeah.
Like, and then I was like, oh, cool. Thanks for that. But anyway, let's end on a good note. So, Archie, is there anything else that you want to say about anything?
No. I actually, you know, I see a bright future.
I do too.
I see a bright future.
I see lots of wonderful things happening for us. Hopefully good things for you, your family, and my family this year as well, having to do with,
yeah,
you know, I'm drawing a circle around my stomach. but yeah.
No, I see a bright future. I think it's going to be a happy future. I don't think it's going to be easy to get there. I think the struggle is real, but the fruit is good.
Did you know BYU is having a conference or a talk tomorrow? No, on the 15th of January of this month, about LGBTQ issues having to do with the honor code or something?
I did not.
Yeah, I saw that on Instagram this morning, and I was like, crazy! So I think I land in Utah the 16th. Otherwise, I'd be like, I am going to this.
Yeah.
Because it just sounds so interesting. Anyway, I'd like to thank Archie Egbert for coming on and being our guest on this very special episode of having our first heteronormative guest. but also, if you have questions, I will be coming to Utah the 21st through the 21st of January through the 28th, and I'll be recording episodes while I'm there. If you'd like to record an episode or be a part of this, contact us at pioneerprojects82@gmail.com, and we would love to add you to the podcast. Thanks again. Also, you're also very welcome, if you're in New York, to come to the Harlem First Ward. We meet at noon this year in 2020. So, and I sit in the back with a giant Diet Dr. Pepper. So feel free to come and join and sit with me.